Well, it has been a year. Some of you probably started out with great hopes, optimism, good intentions, dry annuary, Feb fast, all those things. Then COVID, well, it turned our worlds and our plans upside down. COVID-related sorrow drowning aside, and it has perhaps been a year for strong drink. However, people are on the whole, well, drinking less and less. Testament to that is the unstoppable rise of the mocktail. The young folk, apparently, are drinking less alcohol. Bars have been looking to fill those glasses with creative concoctions that'll help you feel that, well, you're having fun and not missing out. Buffy Gorilla mixes it up with Hugh Leach, a mocktail expert and a brand ambassador for the Melbourne Gin Company.
What has been the most popular mocktail? God, that's a good question. I mean, within Australia, I would say probably the lemon lima bitters, but that's a fairly uniquely Australian thing. Maybe, again, you could potentially argue the Shirley Temple for a period in kind of the 50s, 60s. It really depends, I guess, where you kind of draw the line on what is and isn't a mocktail, perhaps.
Where should we be drawing that line?
It is definitely maybe a difficult line to draw. I would come back to the general way that you define a cocktail, which is a combination of three different ingredients. So, for instance, with a gin and tonic, you have gin, you have tonic, and you have a garnish of sorts. Or a martini, you have a gin, a vermouth, and a twist or a garnish or an olive or something like that.
So those three ingredients, what are some of the base ingredients that you would find in a mocktail?
When you're talking about mocktails, the greatest thing that you might run into as an issue is intensity of flavor. So alcohol obviously delivers a lot of intensity of flavor. A lot of alcohols are very flavorful and punchy and also obviously quite dry. So that's definitely something that is very often a main consideration when constructing a mocktail. Obviously, fruit juices come to mind, very lush, very flavorful, that kind of thing, especially in Australia because we're so lucky to have such amazing produce. The other thing that I've seen quite a lot is tea. So tea providing body and tannin and structure because of the nature of the actual beverage. And then obviously a lot of different flavors being available, green teas, herbal tisanes. So that's something that you see quite a lot used in mocktails. And it's something that I'm also going to show today. The other thing would be various syrups. And I think something you're seeing more and more if you want to have a really complex mocktail is the use of bitterness or tannin, essentially, to make sure that the mocktail itself is not overly sweet. Previously, one of the big issues with mocktails was that they tended to rely on juices or sodas, which just built sugar on sugar on sugar. And so while they might be quite delicious, they were quite cloying or overly sugary.
And how do you ensure that you have that flavor profile without some of those old-fashioned, the sugar upon sugar upon sugar ingredients?
There's a couple of different options. Traditionally, and this is slightly controversial perhaps, bitters are a very good option. Now, bitters are actually alcoholic. And obviously, if you are allergic to alcohol or you have some other kind of requirements, then those aren't options. But bitters are a very good option for that kind of thing because they deliver quite a lot of flavor in a very small amount. The other options you might see, especially across cocktail bars at the moment, is the rise of shrubs, which are syrups in combination with vinegar. So originally a way of preserving fruit and other vegetables and that kind of thing before refrigeration. The vinegar taking off some of that sugar and adding that acid profile to the drink, which is quite beneficial.
Why do you think this non-alcoholic trend is growing in your expert opinion?
I think in terms of the rise of the mocktail and the care being put into it more so than ever. Previously, people that chose not to drink at bars had always been considered second-class citizens, particularly from a high-end restaurant point of view. You have these people that are coming in, they're spending quite a lot on dinner and that kind of thing, and they want to have a full experience, and the people that work at the restaurant also want the guests to have the same quality of experience that they might have if, a sommelier was matching wines with them. And so they're working very, very hard to produce that same experience in a non-alcoholic way or with non-alcoholic options.
Hugh's going to share a mocktail recipe with us in a minute. But first, we need to look at why don't these cocktail glasses contain as much alcohol as they once did? This is a question Dr. Michael Livingston, a senior research fellow at the Center for Alcohol Policy Research at La Trobe University, has been investigating. He found the trend started with young people.
So we've been doing work in this kind of area for about 5 years now, and it was a trend that snuck up on people. It's been happening in Australia since about 2001, that teenage drinking has been declining. And we're always looking for problems and, you know, health panics and concerns that no one really saw until 2011 what a big drop there'd been in teenage drinking, and it's just continued since then.
And what are the factors that are leading to this drop?
It's a story that's common to much of the high-income world. Many other countries have the same kind of decline. And there are a bunch of theories that are still being kind of tested around greater perceptions of the risks of alcohol, much more involved parenting, changes in the way young people socialise with the growth of things like phones and social media as kind of key ways to interact. Maybe alcohol's not so central anymore. And just kind of fashion. But we're still sort of digging around, trying to pin down what it is that started this and how it keeps happening and has continued across all these places across the same sort of period.
And which groups are you looking at in particular?
The first thing we did was look at, well, amongst these sort of 15-year-olds, are there kind of subgroups whose drinking has gone down? Is it amongst kind of middle-class teenagers, or is it amongst people in certain cities or states? But really, it's across every sort of demographic subgroup you can find. So really, we're just looking at kind of young people, people between about 15 and 18, which is where the decline's really strong.
And do you think it has anything to do with any public health messages? Is that actually working?
We'd love to think so. But the problem is it's very hard to pin down. I mean, the evidence that any particular public health campaign is effective is pretty sketchy. But perhaps over 20 years of public health campaigns, those messages have just kind of sunk in. And I think it's probably true that parents are much more aware now about the risks of their kind of 15-year-old drinking, about the fact that the brain's not fully developed at 15, the kinds of harms that happen to kids who drink too much. I mean, there is definitely a shift in attitudes to alcohol, and I think that's been driven at least partly by long-running public health messages.
Do you feel that when they don't start at a young age, that the trajectory for not being boozy into adulthood really sticks with them? Or is there a breaking point where they feel, now is my time?
That's the real question. And I mean, historically, there's good evidence that the younger someone starts drinking, the more risk they're at later in life of problems. So we'd hope that this would mean less problems for people as they grow up. And there's just kind of a debate now across these different countries where this teen trend has happened as to what's happening when these people hit 18. And it seems like in Australia, it's kind of sticking. I mean, they're obviously drinking more than when they were 17, but they're drinking less than 18-year-olds 10 or 15 years ago drink. So it seems like it's kind of sticking, and it might stick, you know, right into adulthood.
And do you know if they're drinking alternative drinks?
We pay attention to the media, of course, and there is a kind of upswing in these trendy mocktail bars or raves that are dry, or a shift in these kind of non-alcohol focused events or venues. They pop up every few months, as you know, London and Melbourne and all over the place. So there seems like there's a bit of a response to this shift in terms of what's available for people to do.
Everyone's going to be healthier.
It's amazing, yeah.
What will we be trying to make this evening?
Well, I've got a pineapple shrub and a rooibos tea. So that's a caffeine-free tea. Has some kind of lovely vanilla-y woody notes to it. And I'm going to be garnishing that with some lemon thyme.
All right. Let's get started.
Awesome. We're using a pineapple drinking vinegar. So this one's a commercially available one. It's not one I've made myself. I find it's really quite good because it has a very, I guess, for lack of a better word, realistic pineapple flavor. So it's quite kind of punchy and zingy. It's got that lovely fresh tropical fruit. So we're going to use 30 mils of that. And that's going to bring kind of our freshness and a little bit of acid to the drink, as well as some sweetness.
Oh, wow, it really does smell just like pineapple, but also you can still smell a little bit of that vinegar in it.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one, that one. Also really delicious just with some soda by itself. It's a pretty incredible little number. And then we've got a rooibos tea. So this is a South African tea, as I mentioned previously. So we're going to be using a fair bit of that, about 60 mils. Just give that a little swirl. And then I'm going to add the soda. Lots of ice. And just a little lemon thyme for garnish. So you're going to have this lovely kind of blend of some bit of vanilla and oak coming off the rooibos tea, and some pineapple and citrus coming from the pineapple shrub, and then more citrus and a little herbal profile coming from the garnish.
All right, well, let's give this one a whirl. It's very yellow. It's very nice.
Yeah.
It does look like summer. Mm. This one really feels like it quenches your thirst.
Awesome.
Thank you.
That was Buffy Gorilla not drinking alcohol on the job with Hugh Leach. a co-owner of a little Australian liquor company called Marionette Liqueurs. You also heard from Dr. Michael Livingston, Senior Research Fellow at the Centre for Alcohol Policy Research at La Trobe University. Blueprint, Radio National.